you for making it along to the last session of the day. My name is Michelle Brooke. I'm currently working with the Open Knowledge Foundation, and this session's on diversity. And there's lots of conversations at the moment about diversity in technology, and most of it's focused around women in tech. It amazes me because I still get asked questions as to why diversity is important and why it's important to include and make sure we are as inclusive as possible. And just kind of in my mind, there's three quick reasons. One is we're having a transitioning economy. Jobs are increasingly all going to have a technology angle, so we need to be ensuring we have as large a pool of people as possible with the suitable kind of skill sets. Secondly, diversity is kind of proxy for diversity of views. So by increasing the diversity of people working in a certain area, we increase the range of problems that we see and the solutions that we can make as well. And thirdly, it's just kind of the fundamental fairness that kind of nobody should be excluded from kind of anything on the basis of their gender, their ethnicity, where they were born, etc. And we live in a world where kind of 16.3% of people doing their first computer science degree are female, and that's it. We live in a world where 0.3% of UK domiciled STEM professors are black. And that's despite the fact that there's something like 3.4% of the population are black. And that's just kind of, to me, those stats are kind of scary and outrageous. And I have this strong desire to make the world a better place and to make those numbers a bit more equal. So I'd like to introduce you to the three women we've got speaking today. There's a small part of me that's annoyed if you don't have a man up here, because it isn't a woman issue, it's a person issue. But these three are absolutely brilliant and doing really interesting work in ways of trying to make the world kind of a little bit more equal. So first up, we're going to have Anne-Marie, who's doing work with the STEMET.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie. I'm doing work with the STEMET. to reiterate, just in case you missed that. So I set up the STEMET earlier this year, actually, as a New Year's resolution, after I spoke at a conference in the States last year. On what I do within work. I work within social business and kind of enterprise collaboration tools. And it was a conference just for women within technology. And it was funny because it was the first time probably since in my life that I'd realised that I was probably one of the only women that I knew that cared about technology or was a geek or, you know, was all preferred gadgets, as it's just been evidenced as someone passed me a Firefox OS mobile, so I now can't concentrate. But yeah, I prefer gadgets. to anything else. It is so amazing. You guys should check it out.
We're keeping it away from her for the time being.
So that was the first time I kind of looked up and realised that, oh no, it's true. At work, I'm probably one of the only girls around. As Michelle pointed, I'm actually probably one of the only black girls around as well within what I do, but it doesn't make me any less good at what I do. And it's kind of wrong, really. So I blogged about it for a while last year without knowing the stats, got back from the States, where the message at the conference, alongside kind of technical things, was if you're a woman in technology, stay in technology, because a lot of women do drop out, and recruit a friend into technology. And I figured, why just do one and stay in myself? Why not attack the entire next generation? So I set up the STEMET project to inspire the next generation of girls into science, technology, engineering, and maths. The problem is it's worse actually in physics and computer science in terms of girls that go into careers and study physics and computer science. It's bad in things like engineering and in biology when we go towards the life sciences, and kind of medicine is where we see more parity and more equality, at least at the beginning. So a couple of stats here to kind of back up what I am doing. 13% of the UK STEM workforce is female. Last year, and we quibble over this number, but I was told, I read it in a study, that last year it was 17%. Assuming that the workforce has stayed roughly the same, it's gone down. Otherwise, as a proportion, it's gone down, which isn't brilliant, isn't great, considering that we're nearly at 50-50 as a population. So it's 50% of the population that are kind of stepping back, sitting back from an entire industry. Of those who, again, the figure is closer to 25% of those who are studying STEM subjects at university. Of the female, so 25% of those studying STEM at university are female. Of those, 2/3 of them decide not to go into a STEM role. So they go off and do something completely different, and they miss out on the physics or the engineering or even the computer science that they've spent their life up to that point studying, getting immersed in, getting excited about, building up knowledge, you know, being good at, because girls do get pretty good grades as well, in sciences on their way up, and we lose that talent, and it's not fair, and it's not right, and it's completely wrong. And yeah, as I said, it's only looking back that I realised I was one of three girls on my course in maths and computer science at university, and the year after me there are no girls on my course, which is awful. So I set up the Mets. What we do is we run panel events, hackathons, and exhibitions for girls, starting from 9 upwards. I can see there's a couple of people on this slide in the audience. Hi. And what we do is we get women who are, so the mission statement in full is, so Mets is a project that I've set up in a bid to inspire the next generation of females into science, technology, engineering, and maths by showing them the amazing women already in STEM via a series of panel events, hackathons, and exhibitions. So we run panel events where we have 8 women and 1 token man on the panel from across science, because you guys are part of the solution, and you know, you love women too, like, you know that. So we get them to do that, we get them to meet them, we get them to play kind of games with them, and just interact with them, and just see real women that work in technology, and see that they wear high heels, and they wear makeup, and they carry handbags too, like any woman would, like, just because you did technology or science or engineering or maths doesn't mean that you're weird in any type of way, and kids sometimes do think this. We do hackathons with them, which has been experimental still, trying to get kids to code when they're 9 years old and can't. There's some things that they can't access, but it doesn't mean that they can't interact with what's going on at the hackathon. And we have been able to get some of them to build different bits and pieces as well from time to time, which is cool, and it's nice to get them seeing that they can create for the mobile, or create for the PC, or they can create something that other people can then go and interact with, and it kind of brings it to their level that, you know, this is something that you could do as a job. There are people that create games, there are people that create apps, you know, the rest of it. And we've also got an exhibition planned for the October half term, where we're going to get them 3D printing and doing loads of cool stuff that's within STEM that they're going to be able to kind of do, make, take home, and experience. So that's what the project's all about. I wanted to kind of go over the 3 lessons learned, or 3 major lessons learned in terms of engaging youth and engaging the girls. So not all of these are kind of girl-specific, if you can call that anything. But we have to make sure that it's very clear what's the point. So whenever we do have the girls in at the events, we want them to see that, you know, if we're at this hack, this is what we're going to try and make, or this is what you could make, or this is the context. So we're working with Accenture at the moment on making a mobile app in a day activity, where the girls are making an app, or prototyping an app for disaster recovery. And for them it's quite important to see that that is what the use of the technology is going to be, and it almost motivates them a little bit more, whereas I think for some of us in the room, the thought of going to a hack day and just playing with data is exciting. For a lot of young people that haven't done this thing before, they need to see that there's going to be something at the end. And the same goes for them meeting the women that are actually working in their different roles. So for the panel events, the next one we've got coming up in June, we've got a lady who's made a mobile app where you take a picture of a piece of clothing and it searches the entirety of the high street for a piece of clothing that's quite similar. And for them, it's like, oh my goodness, that's your job? I want to learn this computer science thing. So we have to make sure that we make it very clear what the point is and what the end game is for the younger kids. We also appeal to parents. So there's a lot of things done around teaching in schools. I think it's very important as well. There's a lot of stuff that goes on at home that you don't want the schools to be pulling against. You want the parents to be pushing in the same direction. But we've seen from talking to a lot of parents as well that sometimes they don't really understand, and that's not just them, but that's society as a whole. There's a lot of research around the concept of science capital, where if a child doesn't have some, or if neither of their parents is involved in science or has a friend who has science, then it's like a world that's completely unknown to them. It's completely scared, and it's kind of like, why would you want to study biochemistry? What's that going to lead to? Why would you want to study computer science? All these computers things, it's just a fad. So we're trying to show them that no, it's not. People live, breathe and eat this, and they're able to be mothers, and they're able to be fathers, and they're able to support themselves without going hungry. And the other thing is that there's an element of social mobility within it as well. So if they're able to gain these skills, which are going to be increasingly important tomorrow, it means that some of the students that we work with who are quite disadvantaged and are from quite disadvantaged areas and backgrounds, it's almost like a breakout for them of, you know, being in cycles of either unemployment or just being underskilled. So that's quite important for us. And again, these are just examples of different people. And the last thing is that who doesn't love a prize? We always give out prizes at the events for everything. So even if it's a panel event, we'll have like a Q&A and you have to fill out the sheet and, you know, how many people on the panel are in technology and how many of them, you know, what was, I don't know, random questions. Anyway, we get them to answer and tick them off and then we mark them at the end and then we give prizes out. And, you know, we've given out Science Girl calendars. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of Science Girl. We've given out these Google t-shirts. You know, we work with a lot of people within this constellation. We're all pulling in the same direction. So we're happy to do that. For us, for our future, which Michelle said I should add this in, it's part of my talk, we would love, if you do think this is a good idea and you'd want to help, we would love to have access to more role models. So we've got Michelle down here on the slide, but if you know any women or men, sympathetic men, who want to join in and sit on panel and who do something that's quite exciting or can code is the big thing. We're looking for females who can code for the hackathon. Not that there aren't that many of them, it's just it's quite difficult because they're not all on my mailing list. Easily somewhere for me to contact. Please let them know about us. We're on nearly every social media platform just because I'm experimenting a little bit to see what works for what we're trying to do. But yeah, put them in touch. We're looking for people to write. We keep getting asked to write things for different people. So we've written for The Guardian, we're writing for Women 2.0, the big blog in the States, and we're writing for, people keep asking us to do stuff. So if you know women that like to write and can write from this perspective, put them in touch with us. And then also the other thing is funding and kind of venues and just support for what we're trying to do. So luckily we've got a little bit of access to the Barbican for this summer, for part of our hackathon we're planning. But if you know anyone else that has a big space for a hackathon or for an exhibition, where we've got loads of power and we can kind of plug a lot of stuff in, or anyone that wants to pay for food or Wi-Fi or prizes or travel or anything really, put them in touch with us. And that's it really. That's what we're about, and those are all the social media platforms that we're on for now, just because it's been a couple months. So yeah, thanks.
So I see one question there. Two questions.
Mine's more of a suggestion. Google Campus have space with power.
We launched there.
Good.
We
so you know about that one.
There's
also Innovation Warehouse and somewhere else escapes me. But seed type places often have space with power that people can come into.
Thank you. Thanks for that. Hi there. I work in science education as an administrator, and for the last 5 years I've been working with the Institute of Physics on the Girls in Physics project, and one of their flyers was bright pink paper with white cursive script saying Girls in Physics, and I personally found that quite offensive, and I have issues with the pandering to stereotypes of femininity and the way that those get hijacked in trying to get women to STEM. And I just wondered if this was something you'd encountered and if you have a particular strategy for combating this.
Yeah, so I actually had a bit of experience with this because that used to be our thing, that, you know, we wear high heels, makeup and carry handbags too. And I had someone called Schrodinger's Cat on Twitter reach out and say, is that how we define women these days? And then there was a whole storify of like, just like a tirade, which I didn't see until like a couple of weeks ago. And I think it's true, but I also think that the fact that women, that the numbers are in decline means that we almost have to overcompensate to pull a whole load of girls back in. And the way I put it is that people like myself are quite stubborn. So I don't care if I'm the only person that gets excited over the Firefox OS phone in the room, or I don't care if I'm the only girl in the room, or I don't care if I'm the only person wearing a skirt in the room, or what it is, I'm gonna be stubborn and do it. Whereas there are people that I know that I went to university with who studied history because, well, their friends were choosing history when we chose A-level subjects. And then that was what they got the highest grade in, so then they decided to study history at university. So there's almost like this wide swathe of girls who aren't as stubborn as people like myself or yourself, who we do need to appeal to. We do need to say, do you know what, it's okay to buy Louboutins and to love fashion and to love shopping and to put makeup on your face. You can still do all of that and sit at a computer and create something amazing and probably create something just as brilliant as all the other guys that have been doing it on their own for the past couple of decades. So that's my take on it. I don't love pink though. And I think that's just a personal thing because that's not a colour I love. I wear blue. I'm like in pentatone blue today just because blue is my favourite colour. So I think don't pander to the stereotypes, but I think sometimes you do need to work with them. You can't have something completely alien and completely different and expect girls to come to it. It's just not going to work.
Hi,
Sue.
more of a very quick comment than a question, but on that point, whilst I loathe pink myself and only recently learned how to put makeup on, there is an issue around the fact that you can really only attack one stereotype at a time. So if the stereotype you're attacking is women can do science and technology, then it becomes difficult to also deal with the secondary stereotype of how women look. So I think to some extent, we do kind of, even if we personally have a problem with pink and sparkles and unicorns, we kind of have to let that slide a little bit if we're favour of the bigger issue of
getting the sugar that goes with the medicine, I guess.
It's just one of those sort of things that studies have shown us, that if you try and pull down too many stereotypes at once, you actually alienate the people you're trying to reach.
Yeah.
I can't think anyone would be upset by unicorns.
Unicorns are awesome. I'm just going to say. Anyway.
I'll just admit, when I was leading the delivery team at GDS, I did buy the most evil pink unicorn as the mascot for the ops team, which at the time was primarily male. And it looks like it wants to eat your liver. It's awful. If you Google terrorlurks.tumblr.com, you'll see it's just so wrong.
It's incredible. So on that note, we'll take further questions in a bit, if that's okay. So I'm just going to move on to Paula, who works with Fossbox and Flossie.
So I don't need to introduce myself. this gets slightly confused because I kind of am treating the two organisations, which some people genuinely think is called Flossbox. Diversity and innovation. Basically, when we started out with Flossie, the idea was to kind of sort of explore why there were so few women. We found out pretty quickly that actually it's really not about that at all, and that diversity is something that we need to see as a positive and not as a problem that we should be looking at. So basically everyone from Forbes, who last year published something about diversity producing better teams, better outputs, everyone thinks, pretty much, all the research unanimously takes the view that diverse teams produce better solutions, basically, because you've got more heads are better than none. And actually, if you have two monocultural environments, you will tend to produce very monocultural outputs, which is not going to work in modern Britain, never mind on the global stage, because one of the issues that I'll briefly touch on is that increasingly business is global. We're looking at a much more horizontal world, and it's not going to be possible to live in our own little worlds anymore. So we kind of just basically give the differently wired brains debate a miss and don't bother with the unicorns versus the, you know, we just basically ignore the whole thing, really. And we work on the basic premise that experience shows that if you try to encourage diversity, your project will become diverse. And if you don't, it won't. So it began to unfold just as a practical problem. It's not, you know, there's not a problem. So we just thought, embrace change, say yes. And I put some pictures in to liven things up. That's an arts workshop at the last Flossie conference. The other thing that was kind of interesting is I was at a thing about creative industries and my brain, it being 5 o'clock, I can't remember where or when, but the question came up as to the sort of millionaire hero, you know, the kind of innovator as creative hero, that you sort of make billions and flog this to somebody and you know, go off and make your next billions. And the question came up, does this actually work for women? And whilst there are women it would work for, I think possibly, you know, like more widely, not so much. Women, for whatever reason, culture, nature, who knows, generally quite like to solve problems. Yeah, we like to play, but we also, I think it's the thing you were talking about, girls like to know, what's this for, what's the point? So that's one of the things that we kind of try to keep in mind. The other thing is that thinking globally and acting locally is not something that most of us do actually in the Western world. It's something that tends to happen much more in developing countries. And one of the other things that I find quite interesting is that I have loads of friends who do co-design like I do, who are constantly roaring around Africa and India doing jolly co-design problems and, you know, solving local problems. And I think, well, where are you in East London? You know, it's kind of, think local, guys, you know, because I can never find anyone to go and do work with annoying kids in East London, you know, not that high. So basically, we really want to take it much more seriously of engaging with people around us and widening participation generally. And it makes sense in terms of if you actually are trying to get somewhere, because diverse involvement are becoming a key to going global. Major corporations are realising that actually they're going to have to compete in global markets, and they can't do it by expecting that Western soft power is going to define markets in future. So it's not just a question of let's be nicer, but also let's kind of, you know, leave behind certain kinds of ideas that float around the West with regard to development. So Flossie and Fossbox are actually different organisations, but because there's a lot of people are in both, so it kind of does sort of tend to meld together. Flossie is a conference. It's an annual conference which we ran for the first time last year, and we're going to run again in November this year. The way this came about was originally we thought, well, you know, if we have a conference for women in open source, that'll be like six women. So we thought, well, how can we broaden this? And then, well, actually, let's put it in with anything. If you're doing anything to do with anything open, open access, open culture, open data, open source, anything, come along. And then we realised that was a huge plus, because it meant that you're running into people who are doing all kinds of different things. And I always come out of, I mean, you probably experience it here, you know, like you run into people you haven't seen, and they're doing this, and you think, oh, where are we, you know. So we actually found it quite a plus that we drew in women from all kinds of different environments, because it gives you ideas, basically. Fossbox is a woman-led company, which kind of became woman-led in the end because all the men left. We insist on sitting about asking end users what they wanted, and that kind of frustrated a lot of people. So we just kind of ended up, by default, a women company. We didn't mean to be, but we are. We work with non-profits, also with universities, museums, and we work in the local community. We do something called co-design, and we do a particular kind of co-design called participatory design, which was developed originally it was originally called cooperative design. So it's democratic, basically it's democratic decision making, that kind of thing. And we believe it also produces better software because it builds in what people want. You don't have to guess. Because, you know, normally when you're developing software, you just kind of take a vague stab at it and, you know, do it that. But actually, it makes much more sense to talk to people beforehand. And we involve them in a kind of like structured process. And these are the student volunteers at Queen Mary. Flossie is at Queen Mary every year. And we had some amazing feedback, actually, because the volunteers were all CS students in Queen Mary. And we had a couple of emails afterwards from women saying, God, we've been rattling around like a square peg in a round hole. You know, I'm actually close to giving up. But having been in this amazing thing full of women doing interesting things, we're going to actually get back in there and make it work. So that was really nice for our first year. It's kind of puzzling how it is that open source, with such an open framework, manages to be so monocultural. But we just thought, we'll never know. Moving on. So we decided that what we needed to do, basically, was offer skills, because I think it's very intimidating. What tends to happen is if a woman turns up and knows a lot, men will respect her. But if she turns up like, well, I don't really know what the hell I'm doing, tends to get written off as stupid. Whereas a man turning up like, I don't really know what I'm doing, people will be much more, you know, show them what they should be doing, at least, or in any way engage with it. So what we kind of, it would be a good idea if women can actually be able to fend for themselves when they actually smack into the open source world, we felt. So we started looking at skills workshops, and originally we just sort of did them. And what happened with the first one, we did at the National Museum of Computing, which was it was really amazing because there's a lot of women there, and they did a woman's tour of the museum for us, looking at all the early kind of women doing compiling and punch tape and all this. It was really great. And then we did a bunch of workshops. And what we found was about half the women who came were returners. So women had left, had a baby, and couldn't get back in. Partly because it moved so fast, but also because there seems to be a kind of mental correlation between women having babies and their brains turning irrevocably to mush. Which just isn't, I mean, you know, there is an 18-month mush factor, but, you know, pretty soon it all snaps back and it's all good. So having a baby is not the same as a lobotomy. Having a baby is a temporary distraction, but of course when you come back 3 or 4 years later, it's all moved on. I mean, I went through this myself, and I'm looking at the job description thinking, what? I don't even know what that skill set is, much less have it, you know. So we kind of did these workshops that were very oriented around, not so much like in one day we're going to teach you a new skill, right, but in one day we're going to show you where is the market at the moment, what's going on, what skills do you need, and to just kind of like pick up an end of it and get started. So we did stuff like App Inventor, which is really for children, but it's like a really great, you know, and that's one of the main food groups in open source development at the moment. We did a Drupal workshop in the first one, Drupal development, and I can't remember what the middle one was now. We're not doing the Drupal again, we're doing Python and Git. We had someone from IBM came along, a woman called Zoe, who was amazing, and kind of showed women how to engage with Git and not kind of just be totally terrified by the whole business, basically. And that went down really well. And we're in the middle of running the second one with the British Computer Society, who've produced some amazing skilled women. And there's starting to be a demand for more skills because returners actually know how to program. It's just that they've kind of lost the plot with what's going on at the moment. So it's actually the other thing that we began to realise is because there's a huge skill shortage, as you know, in open source. Basically, we've got a bunch of women. There are far more women in proprietary than in open. So basically, it's a way of plugging women out of proprietary back into open, and also providing, like, hitting those skills gaps with women who are pretty much oven ready, as it were. You know, it doesn't take much to reskill women. And obviously, getting involved in open source projects revives their CV so that they can go back in fighting and not be looked at like some halfwit because they've been out for 4 years looking after a baby. So it's kind of win-win in all directions, basically. And I think we're going to try and develop this as much as possible, how we're going to stick, because we can't. Really demanding doing a day's, I don't know how many of you facilitate workshops, but it is, you know, it takes you 3 days to come around again afterwards. So we're going to have to find a way of, we don't want to charge loads of money because a lot of women returners are dead skin, so we've got to figure this out, how to make it more sustainable. Your question with regard to how women look is a bit fuzzy, you can't really see it, but basically this is a room full of women coders at a thing called ETC, Eclectic Tech Carnival, which used to run in different cities in Europe every year. And it also brings together artists, and I used to be involved in this. And basically, it's a bunch of extremely struggling women. Mostly couldn't give a rat's backside what they look like. And a range of gay, straight, married, single, mad, not mad, totally mainstream. You know, it's just basically
not mad rather than sane.
The important thing is to remember that women occupy the entire spectrum, and you can't, like, the problem is, right, you can't say that women are like this or women are like that. It's one of the things we have learned not to do at Flossy ever, because as soon as you open your mouth and say women are like this, 30, you know, friends and family screaming from the gallery, no, they're not, I'm not like that, you know. There was a really interesting paper in the 70s written by a black woman. The title is Ain't I a Woman? Because basically women are being constructed as soft and, you know, at home and protected. And she's like, well, where the hell were black women when that was going on? Exactly. So basically, you know, if you open your mouth and say women like rhinestone telephones, I start thinking, well, you know, actually, what am I then? Something that's not a woman. No, you can't, no. Women are right across the spectrum. They range from, you know, I mean, I know coders who are handbag glam, you know, and I know coders who roll out of bed at 4 p.m, you know, like, don't realise that they haven't brushed their hair for a week, and, you know, it's just like the whole spectrum. And women also occupy the whole spectrum from soft skills. I'm now ignoring my slides, I'm warming to my dear. From soft skills right through to hardcore coding. I know some serious, you know, like a couple of women sitting around going on about whether significant white space is a good thing or not, you know. Women occupy this whole spectrum. So, Fosworks does community design, is what we actually do. I've kind of gone over that, but basically what we're saying is that bringing together all these different people and actually really engaging with communities and users really does, it makes your software better, but it also enables you to innovate and come up with new things. And my feeling is that the whole kind of thing with online and blah, 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 it is reaching a point of saturation. I think we probably do need to do something to have some more ideas, because I'm not sure. You need to shut up.
You've got 3 minutes.
3 minutes where I need to shut up. Okay, we do all kinds of research projects. More people are flossing. And my last thing, open your mind as well as your code. So people say, what can I do? Well, you don't actually have to do all that much, really. You just need to not put barriers there, because it can be freaky. I mean, I experience it myself. If I'm dealing with someone who's coming at me, stroppy, like, why are you doing it this way, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, one's instinct is to go away. I was quite happy before you came. So basically, really, you just kind of have to expand your comfort zone a bit and be comfortable dealing with people who are not behaving or feeding back in a way that really works for you. Just, you know, take a deep breath, chill. It's fine. And also, I mean, it's really important. Quite often, if someone is being a pain in the butt, it's because they are feeling something, you know. They're not feeling ease. So quite often, you need to kind of think, it's not about me. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to either just give them some space or even ask, you know, what's the effect of what this really about? Innovation is disruptive. Don't be afraid of change. Things will not carry on the same way if you let a load of people who are not like you into a project. That's a fact, sorry. But, you know, that is a fact. So you need to kind of be able to deal with that. And it's not so hard. Again, it's a question of relaxing and not kind of, you know, like getting too personally, you know, don't feel criticised because someone else is uncomfortable. Engage with your wider communities and remember, difference is not a deficit. It is a plus. If you want to get involved, the CFP is out for Flossy 2013. We are looking for proposals. Men are welcome to attend, but we want to have all the facilitators and presenters are women because of the role model thing, basically. So it's not to be arsy, it's just because it's really important for women to see other women. Because you know what, as soon as I started talking about skills workshops, everyone said to me, we'll never get enough skilled women to teach these workshops. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about getting enough women who want to learn the skills into the workshops. And believe me, like, we have plenty of very skilled women doing workshops. So for that reason, we're looking for women to give presentations, but we're really happy for men to get involved in other ways. There's a mailing list, and which is a discussion list, it's two-way. And we're always looking for women who want to do it. And I'm always getting emails from women, and the imposter thing, you know. Well, I'm useless at anything at all. I couldn't possibly be any use to you, but, you know, if you could possibly use such a humble and useless person as me, please email me back. So I will email back and say, well, you know, basically, if you can kind of use social media or do, you know, pretty much we're looking for admin people. And people come along, we find out they've got these amazing skills that, you know, women just really don't want to. So if you want to get involved, you don't need to know anything.
Thank you ever so much. So, are there any immediate questions? Yes. 1 second. Microphone for you. I try. There you go.
So, in terms of getting women, and whether specifically returners or not, more involved in open source projects, I know that some of the larger open source organisations, and I know has a specific group trying to encourage women to. Is there something that, from the point of view of someone who is involved in an open source project, that we can do, or something, somewhere that we can sort of say we're always happy for people to come along and we'll mentor them into developing and contributing for our software, but we don't really have many places that we can tell people that we're quite happy to do that. We've done it within Google Summer of Code, but we're happy to do it just sort of generally. And we'd be quite happy to sort of put the word out, but we don't really know where to do that.
We would rip your arm off, because one of the things that comes out of the skills workshops is that women are saying, I wouldn't do it literally. Women are saying, how do we get involved in an open source project? So that's basically about if we know people are actively welcoming women, then that's something that we can make women aware of. And also, I think when women turn up, it can be quite difficult. I think women are very self... A lot of women, not me and not Anne-Marie, not in fact any woman sitting here, but many women feel uncomfortable in kind of saying, I can do this.
Yeah.
So it's a question of kind of like maybe slightly changing the way that
people go by. Introducing them to someone that they can talk to.
Okay.
Where do you the equivalent of where do you sit and, you know, introduce them to people and, you know, put a human face on it.
Okay, second question. I'm going to take two more questions, one here and one from you, both fairly quick if possible, and quick answers as well.
Hello. You mentioned the reskilling workshops and things you do. How much of the success of those would you attribute to the presentation of the material being attuned to the people attending it, and how much was merely the welcoming environment that was being presented for people who all knew they weren't going to be judged? Because they had that skills gap when they came along to it.
I think it's both, basically. In a nutshell, it's both. I mean, I've seen workshops not go well because the workshops weren't that brilliantly designed. So a lot of the workshops are built by women, and they're very much organised around this thing of, you know, this is the activity we're going to do. It's not like a group pizza. This is how the thing is meant to look. Download all the stuff here. This is how you install it. And, you know, step 1, 2, 3, 4... basically seems to work. And then what will happen is that will start buzzing, they'll start helping each other, and then you'll get some people saying, we want more, we want more, we want a code. Or I'm fed up with this baby thing, like what's the JavaScript behind it, and you can just take people along from there.
More of a suggestion about how to involve more women, or how to show that you want to include more women in what you're doing. You could tweet about things you know that women can go to locally, like Girl Geek things, Fossbox, and so on. So if your company or you as a person are promoting what you know involves women, that says to women, we are interested and we want to know what's going on, as well as other you know, minority groups. So do something practical.
Brilliant, thank you. And so that's going to take us on to the third talker, Mary, who's got practical diversity.
Hi. Can you hear me all right back there? Probably. Everybody looks terribly, terribly asleep. So if you're still awake, wave your hand. Yeah! That makes me feel a lot better, even if it doesn't make you more awake. So I'm Mary. And the main reason I'm here is I've had some practical experience doing some of this stuff. I worked at a very large corporation that I won't name just in case I get in trouble with the PR guys. And effectively moved their recruitment from about 30% women into IT management and to about 50-50. And have some kind of practical things of what worked and what really, really didn't. Going to try focus on the positive stuff then. I also founded an LGBT, a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, for anybody who doesn't know, network that Stonewall recognised as a star performer and got the company that we worked for into the what's called the Workplace Quality Index, which is basically, if you're gay, the list of companies you look at and go, I'm probably not going to have pranks played on me just because I date women if I work there. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from with this. I am a bit of a diversity statistic, though, so I'll own up to that right now. I'm female, I'm gay, I'm foreign, despite the accent. I'm actually South African, but nobody bloody understands me when I talk like this. And therefore, I have adopted a practice of just mirroring whoever I talk to, which makes me sound hilarious in Texas, but fairly British around here. I'm employed, which, if you ask the Daily Mail, is a terrible thing because I'm stealing your jobs. But if I weren't employed, I'd be stealing your welfare system. So, fucked either way, really. And I'm also disabled and I'm an atheist. But I think probably the thing I was most aware of until I was about 22 was how ridiculously privileged I was because I grew up white during apartheid South Africa. My entire childhood was full of signs that said "Net Blancos," which means whites only. And you hear about the American Civil Rights Movement and how people had to sit at the back of the bus. You weren't even allowed on the bus when I was growing up, and so I'm probably much more aware of the being part of a group in power that had opportunities that other people didn't have than I have of any of those other things that make me a little bit of a diversity statistic. My key message, if there's one thing you walk away with today, is that there's a spectrum here, and I think we focus a lot on trying not to discriminate. But that's very different from creating an environment that's completely inclusive where everybody can be their best. And it's important not to discriminate, legally, if nothing else. But the word I hate the most is tolerance. Because you know who tolerates other people? People who hate them. my little brother tolerated having an older sister. It's not an embracing, it's not a good word, right? And so I don't want to be tolerated, and I imagine that many of you don't particularly aspire to being tolerated either. And so being included, I think, is a much better thing to aim for. And much more importantly, if you can craft an environment that is inclusive, that helps everybody. That helps the straight, white, cisgendered guy just as much as it helps the disabled, foreign, lesbian. And, you know, that's helpful. So, some things that I've seen worked, and some of these are a little weird. So, you know, some of them surprised me, but if you have an hour later, I'll talk you through all of the data and all the detail. Number one is reducing fear, and actually something I heard a lot in what these two ladies were talking about earlier was about reducing fear, helping have people have skills, helping them not be afraid of doing things. And I see a lot of people increasing opportunities, but not always addressing the fact that that fear needs to be reduced as well. So ways to do that, try and reduce the impact of failure. And I know that there's a lot of opinions about whether having, you know, gay meetups is a good idea because it's, you know, segregating. But if it reduces fear and lets people play, then I think that there's some value to it. Reduce the risk of humiliation, or at least consider it. Emma Mulqueeney tells a great story about how she was trying to get more women or more girls to come to Young Rewired State, and by repeatedly talking about how they didn't want to stand out from the other teenagers, basically reduced the number of women who were signing up, because focusing on that particular group was the worst possible way to encourage them to get involved. I think she's very brave for having shared that as well. And increase the friendly audience. And that's important, and something where I've seen the community be the very, very most helpful is in zero tolerance for inappropriate behavior. So if you just will not let your male interns talk about the short skirts of your female interns, that is, if you do nothing else, then that is going to be helpful. The other thing I'd say would be frame guidance altruistically, which is a big mouthful, but basically what I've seen is that if you frame your advice as stealing more pie, that appeals to a relatively small subset of the world. Altruistic advice, bake more pie, make more cake, tends to appeal to a much broader audience. And where I particularly saw this as really important was where I worked previously, there was a very large far Asian community at work. And coming from a non-individualistic culture, anything which they heard as be more selfish, you've got to be out for yourself, you've got to put yourself forward, completely cognitive dissonance. It was going to hurt them to take that advice. And so if you can frame your advice less as be a selfish bastard and try and get one up on other people, and more as, hey, wouldn't it be great if people knew what you were doing because they might learn from you, for example, then that tends to be, it tends to have much more traction. Not just with women, but with a number of, you know, shy guys do benefit from that advice too. Not having to self-promote, but rather just to share what you do. That simple change in language is actually really important and really helpful. An example of this, one of the ways that we moved our recruitment from being, you know, 30% to 50% was we completely changed how we talked about networking. And we were a company where, sadly, we had too few wikis, not enough knowledge codified, and a lot more. You had to kind of find who the right people were to get stuff done. And so when we frame networking as, you know, you've got to be out for yourself, find the people who can do you favours, that's how you're going to beat the other interns to get the graduate job at the end of it, that worked for some of the guys and really, really upset many of the women. And we figured this out eventually, took a couple of years because we're idiots, and reframed it a bit more like this horribly saccharine Haley Joel Osment movie, which is Pay It Forward. If you get to know people because you might be of use to them, you might be able to share what you were doing, that the fact that if in that 12 weeks that they were focused on their particular project, they would probably know more about it than most people around them. They might be able to help completely flip their perception of why it would be good to talk to other people. And we saw our female interns become much more outgoing and much more integrated with the broader organisation. And that made a fundamental difference to how well they delivered their work. And that really kind of made me very much more aware of what language I used when I spoke to them and what training and who we chose to train them on some of those softer skills. I'll say a bit more about that in a bit. The other thing I'd say is role modelling matters. I have data to show this. When we used to go out to universities and present, if there was a woman presenting, we got more female applications. Hard numbers, almost 100% more. It was very, very significant. And so when you present a monoculture, even if it's just that those were the only guys who were available, people are going to make assumptions that maybe you don't like. This includes if you only send white people or similar. The most important question, the best predictor of whether you can get people in or whether you can keep them, is somebody's ability to agree with this question. Somebody like me can be successful here. And it's not you can be successful here, because that gets your hackles up. It makes you go, of course I can, I'll fucking beat all of them. This is somebody like me, somebody who I look at and go, maybe I could be them in 5 years or 10 years. And if you look around your organisation and everybody senior looks exactly the same, and you're wondering why people are leaving when they're a bit more junior, see whether the junior people would answer this question in a positive way, and try to figure out how you do it. Now, you can't magic your senior management into a wonderfully diverse team overnight, but you can show success of other people at that level if you don't have them in your own organisation. And so the second thing I'd like you to take away, this question matters so, so much. When I ran our LGBT network, we eventually got a way of kind of splitting out the results of people who were part of the network from the broader organisation when we had our kind of annual morale survey, for want of a better fucking awful HR term. And almost all of our group was prouder of the company than average, believed more in the leadership than average, but only about 20% of us could answer this question positively. And that was the major difference between us and the broader organisation. And we also had a positive response to, I'm probably going to look to leave in the coming year. So that being able to visualise your future success based on seeing people that are similar to you, and that how you define what like you is completely up to you. Okay. Two things about privilege. The number one thing privilege gives you is a belief that you can. I believed I would get to go to university, that I would get a job, that I could live any life I wanted to, and a lot of that belief came from the environment that I grew up in, which was very privileged. And so remember that belief that you can is a privilege, which some of us have and some of us don't. And somebody not believing in themselves isn't a deficit of their own confidence or their own intelligence, but it is maybe just something that they haven't been granted that you have. The other thing that it convinces you of is that your innate skills have got you where you are. Your hard work is the reason that you are where you are. And I see that the reaction from people that they feel attacked by there being a suggestion that being white, male and straight might have been a little bit of an advantage in certain industries, because that undermines a belief that everything that you have achieved is down to just your own personal work and skills and abilities. I actually don't think it's a problem to admit that it's not a level playing field, and making it a level playing field is something worth investing in, even if that means disadvantaging yourself a little bit. And I say that as somebody who would prefer to actively disadvantage myself. When I go back home, I sponsor scholarships for more girls to get into STEM. It's very hard to get a good enough high school grades to get university scholarships. There's none of the wonderful welfare state you have here. And we very actively are trying to help more non-white kids get that, because our history of being able to go to university and get a good education is ridiculous. Apartheid refactored the school system so that the colour of your skin determined how much education you got. If you were black, you were only going to be educated to be barely literate. You left school at 12. If you were not black but not white, you were only ever going to be an artisan of some description. You might learn some skills. You left school at 16. You had absolutely no option to go to university. And so leveling that playing field is personally very important to me, but that's a specific situation. I'm not saying it's the same everywhere. But acknowledging that there is a difference is the first thing to start with. Something that fascinated me, we did role modelling sessions with our interns, and they always asked, you know, did you always know you wanted to be a director? And all of the male leaders that we had tend to say, yeah, I always knew I could do more, and I believed in myself, and that's how I got here. And all of the women tended to say, no, to be honest, it scared the crap out of me, but my mentors told me that they thought I could do it, and so I believed that they were probably right. And on the one hand, this makes me a little sad, but on the other hand, it's an important thing that it's such a pattern. I see it so often that I'm not going to say all women feel like this, because I agree with that point as well. But one thing that you can do, whoever you are, to help is tell the people that you believe in that they're brilliant. Tell the people that you think are good that they are good, that they are worthwhile, and that they have something to give, because some people need to hear that from you a lot more than other people do. Am I running out of time? Yeah. Johnny Clegg I think he's from like Lincolnshire or Lancaster or something like that. But he's a white South African who went and lived with the Zulu tribe and learnt to speak Zulu wonderfully and make some pretty awesome music. This song makes me cry, so I'm not going to read it out. But my key point is, so much advice reads as, be more like a white, straight, cis, white guy. Cisgendered is like you were born with the gender that you are, for anybody who doesn't know. And finding a way to be successful and still be yourself is really important. So the other thing I say is be aware of when you're giving advice that might be more like something you're not. Being the most professional version of who you are is great, but having to act like something you're not isn't. And hopefully... my slides have decided that they're not going to play. Last 2 points. Sometimes systems are loaded. Companies that have a pitch for a pay rise process have wider gender pay gaps than those that don't. So think about whether some of the way that your systems or your organizations or your processes work is disadvantaging some people. Companies which have like rating systems and then basically automate the pay rises, so you kind of have to perform well, but then everything else after that is automatic, have much reduced gender pay gaps. And that's a really interesting thing. So one interpretation of that is, if you have to pitch for your pay rise, women find that much more uncomfortable than most men do. But if you fix that, the guys who are a bit more shy and humble, they tend to benefit from it as well. So it's another thing that can help everybody. My final slide, I promise, Michelle. There we go. So, to recap, assume fear, focus on reducing it. Advise people to bake more pie, not steal more pie, and they'll take your advice a lot better. Bake more cake, makes the world a better place. Connect people with role models, even if you don't have them in your organization. They are important, and they are sometimes more important than to you. Many of the women we have already in IT, the gay people we have in IT, the people of color we have in IT or in technology, We're here and we are used to dealing with being in such a tiny minority. There are probably some other women who need some different things than we need in order to come here and be successful, or to come here and be gay and be happy and whatever else. So what works for you personally isn't necessarily always the right thing. Grow more role models. Remember that question, if someone like me can be successful here, tell people that you believe in that they can do it. And if there's, go do that. It really will make a difference. Tell people that you believe in them that they're there because of their skills. The number of women I get tell me that they got asked to speak at a conference just because they were female. Fuck that noise. to quote Maz, who's not here today, but fuck that noise. I have a little GDS heckling crew down the front here today. Help people find ways to be true to themselves and to be successful, and look at whether those processes and systems are discriminating against people as well. Okay.